Mr. Kelleher.
Good morning, Your Honors. Christopher Kelleher on behalf of the Cook County Sheriff. A strip search shall be performed in an area that ensures the privacy and dignity of the individual. Illinois law mandates that a sheriff shall perform strip searches. The words may, if, or should are nowhere to be found.
You know, before you get too much into that, which I have to say strikes me as a very strained reading of the regulation, but putting that to one side, I would appreciate anyway if you would focus on the jurisdictional question, why this is a case that falls within our appellate jurisdiction.
For a couple reasons, Your Honor. First is the 11th Amendment issue. We raised that in the district court in our answer to the third amended complaint, along with our answer to the fifth amended complaint.
But you didn't raise this particular aspect of it until the end of the trial.
That's
on
correct,
liability.
That's correct, Your Honor. We did raise it in our motion for an interlocutory appeal after the summary judgment, but we did not again raise it until the motion after the trial.
My understanding was your theory was different. Now, is it the sheriff's position that the 11th Amendment is one of those things that you can just wait and see how the trial goes, how the wind is blowing, and just file a Rule 50 motion if you're afraid you're going to lose in front of the jury?
No, Your Honor, but we would submit that...
Why not? I thought that was exactly your position, that there was no time that was too late and there was no move so strategic that you couldn't go ahead and raise this.
Well, I would point out, Your Honor, to the Supreme Court cases that we cited in our brief, Edelman, cases such as the Alabama v. Pugh, that basically say that 11th Amendment can be raised at any point. I admit that tactically it probably should have been raised earlier, but the fact is that we did eventually raise it, although we did raise it initially. We did not press it until after the trial. Frankly, we believe that Bell v. Woolfish foreclosed plaintiff's case on the merits. We did not think that we would get to this juncture.
So there's no such thing as waiver by conduct, in your view?
I would submit no, Your Honor, not based on the three Supreme Court cases that we cited.
Well, I don't know that those court cases really look at this in its entirety. What do you do with this court's decision, at least with respect to interlocutory appeals, in Apostol?
Well, Your Honor, we do think that there, along with the 11th Amendment, we do think there's grounds for pendant jurisdiction. But we do believe that the 11th Amendment...
But Apostol isn't just about pendant appellate jurisdiction. It's about the question whether a frivolous immunity appeal transfers jurisdiction to the Court of Appeals.
Well, obviously, Your Honor, we don't believe that this is a frivolous appeal.
I assure you don't, but yet Apostol is there. You asked the district court, did you not, for a stay of proceedings?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Did you ever file a motion under Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 8 in this court for a stay of proceedings after you were unsuccessful in the district court?
We did not, Your Honor.
So proceedings are continuing?
Yes, they are. The damages phase of the trial is ongoing as we speak.
Okay.
Jail standards are set by the Illinois Department of Corrections.
I'm stopping discussion in case my colleagues have some issue about jurisdiction, but I
yes,
have to
well,
say...
I have another question about jurisdiction, which is, in what sense is this order final? The Supreme Court has said that denials of motions to dismiss and denials of summary judgment are final because they reflect a conclusive disposition. But this order looks like a way station between trial on the merits and remedy. How is that final?
Well, Your Honor, we did raise this as the judgment for the motion for a new trial, which the district court denied.
Well, I should think that the denial of a motion for a new trial is a classically non-final order. Do you have any cases in other circuits that have allowed an appeal from a motion filed midway between trial on the merits and trial on remedy?
I don't believe we do, Your Honor. But the situation here is that the jury found a finding of liability on the three counts. And we, at that point...
I know exactly what the situation is. That's why I'm asking whether there could possibly be jurisdiction. And I got one more jurisdictional question. The premise of cases like Barron's against Pelletier is that an immunity appeal is distinct from the merits, whereas what you're using the immunity appeal as a tail to wag the dog of the merits. What you really want is for us to discuss the merits. I view that as a confession that this is not suitably an immunity appeal.
Well, Your Honor,
any case that permits this kind of stratagem?
No, Your Honor. We would obviously like the court to consider the merits, but we do believe firmly in our 11th Amendment position. This case is sui generis. It does not fit the jail management paradigm of DeGenova or the law enforcement.
I have no idea why you say this case is sui generis. You said that in your brief, but it looks to me like a very ordinary case that is attempting to challenge certain procedures that the sheriff maintains at the jail. We've seen many such cases.
Well, Your Honor, the cases that we reviewed, such as DeGenova and Richmond, those cases, there was no state mandate saying that the sheriff shall do something.
There is no mandate in Illinois requiring the sheriff to strip search every last person who comes within his custody. There just isn't.
Your Honor,
there's no period after the sheriff shall strip search, period.
It does go on to say that
in an area.
Correct.
It doesn't say the sheriff has to strip search everyone. But that, again, is the merits. I mean, it doesn't answer Judge Easterbrook's question about the interlocutory nature of this ruling. And if that weren't enough, obviously a great number of the damages trials that you seem to be concerned about are going forward regardless of what happens, because this trial was only about the Class 1 people.
That's true, Your Honor, but the damages phase of this litigation will likely take some time.
I understand that, but there's going to be damages for the Class 2 people. There's going to be damages, you know, for the rest of the Class 1 people before the alleged change in the policy. I mean, we're right in the middle of things, aren't we?
To a degree, Your Honor, as it goes to damages, but as far as the liability goes and as far as whether the sheriff does have any sort of immunity, I still think it's properly before the court, and I would say respectfully disagree with Your Honor's assessment, but we do believe that shall means shall.
And it shall be in an area that preserves the privacy of the individual. That, no one's disagreeing with shall means shall, but it just, what's it referring to? Shall be performed in an area that ensures privacy and dignity of the individual. The individual shall not be exposed to the view of others who are not specifically involved in the process. That's what the regulation says.
And the sheriff does not quarrel with the importance of those concepts of privacy and dignity.
Well, but again, I'm not sure that we're there. But
I've got one more problem with the immunity appeal. I don't understand its premise. The premise of this appeal is that if state law directs the sheriff to do something, then the sheriff is a state actor rather than a county official. Now, why is that true? Think about other circumstances. The Clean Air Act absolutely requires power plants to put precipitators on their stacks so that the amount of fly ash coming out is reduced. And that's done. Does that mean that anybody who wants to get relief against Consolidated Edison or any other producer of electricity has the problem that they would have sovereign immunity when you sue them because they are the federal government?
No, Your Honor. I think
well,
here...
Why is this any different? Right? You agree. The premise of my question is that somebody who complies with a law set up by another jurisdiction does not become part of that other jurisdiction. He's just a person subject to a law and complying with it. Well, the sheriff is a county official. On your view, the sheriff must comply with a state law, and therefore is the state. Well, if Commonwealth Edison is not the federal government when it complies with the Clean Air Act, why is the sheriff the state when he complies with a state law?
Because the Illinois Department of Corrections has oversight authority.
No, look. This doesn't have anything to do with the Illinois Department of Corrections. I'm asking a generic question about the circumstances, if any, under which a person's need to comply with a law made by some other jurisdiction means that that person is a part of that other jurisdiction. Need to comply with a state law, you're the state. Need to comply with a federal law, you're the federal government. When, if ever, does that happen as a matter of law?
Probably not very often, Your Honor, but in these instances...
Why ever?
Probably never. But
that's the premise of your appeal. Unless the answer is always, I don't see how your appeal can reach stage zero.
Well, I think based on this court's language in DeGenova and Ruman, the court looks at what the particular issue at bar is. And if the court looks at the particular issue here, and that is that the sheriff shall perform strip searches...
Look, it doesn't get to first base with my question. You have a particular issue in my Clean Air Act case about whether the utility has complied with the provisions of the Clean Air Act requiring precipitation of fly ash. Right? And that's what the lawsuit is about. And a private party sues the utility saying, you didn't do what federal law requires you to do. And the utility says, you can't sue me, I've got sovereign immunity. Because what I'm doing is compelled by federal law. Therefore, I'm the federal government, and you can't sue me. Right? That's what happens. I don't understand why that claim by the private utility is any different from the claim you are making now.
Well, Your Honor, the sheriff is a county officer.
Exactly, and therefore not the state. As a matter of 11th Amendment jurisprudence, a county is not the state.
True, as a baseline. But then the court has to consider the particular issue, and that, I believe
well,
that's where we
diverge. Then it seems to me you have to answer my Clean Air Act question by saying, if the utility is sued for supposed noncompliance with the Clean Air Act, it is the federal government, and therefore no private person can sue it because it has sovereign immunity.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your position?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, the implications are sweeping, to say the least, because there are many entities in the state of Illinois, to move it a little bit back toward the public sector, that operate under a slew of state statutes and regulations. School districts, for example, in the state of Illinois have any number of requirements imposed by state law, but they're not the state either, or at least until your view came along, they haven't been considered to be the state. They're required to hold hearings for disabled children. They're required to meet a certain number of days. They're required to administer certain tests of competency, which have been obviously the subject of a great deal of debate, but there are no end of requirements. And according to you, they're all the state as well. This would be a revolution in 11th
Amendment. Or actually, if they didn't comply with the IDEA, they'd be the federal government.
That too.
Heaven forfend the No Child Left Behind Act should be enforced. I guess under your view, it can't be.
Well,
because every defendant in every one of those cases would be the federal government.
See if I can place it this way, that what you're suggesting is that if this individual is complying with state law, under a mandated state law, he's immune.
Precisely.
And it strikes me as being remarkable, but go ahead.
That's our position. Admittedly, there's not a significant body of case law that follows this theory.
There's actually a lot of law that doesn't, I think, is your larger problem.
Yes.
And we would simply assert that the distinguishing factor here is that the sheriff is invoking this provision that he must follow.
The sheriff is running the jail. I mean, just as a practical matter, the sheriff is acting in this lawsuit in his capacity as the person who runs the Cook County Jail. There are cases which have addressed exactly that issue and have said that when that's what the sheriff is doing, he's a county officer.
He's responsible,
for example, to make sure that the jail is a safe place, and that's one of the reasons people are searched. You know?
Yes. But here I think it's particular. It's more particular than just the global, well, the jail must be safe or the jail must be managed. This is something more specific, and it instructs the sheriff to do something in a particular way, that the sheriff shall perform strip searches. And again, obviously, I understand Your Honor quarrels with the second part of that, the privacy and dignity issue, but I think that goes to discretion. And this court has noted in Ruman v. Sheehan that simply because there's discretion afforded to the sheriff, it does not obviate 11th Amendment immunity.
You're into your rebuttal time.
I see that, Your Honor. Are there no further questions? Thank you.
Mr. Kanovitz.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Your Honors, I'm prepared to discuss the merits that have been attacked in that brief, but I will first get immediately to the jurisdictional issue because I don't believe that this case belongs here. That's the reason Judge Kennelly issued his apostle certification. That's the reason we filed a motion to dismiss. And when we are considering the underlying issue that they say allows them to come to this court, this immunity issue, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, what is the record? Because this is an appeal from a motion for judgment as a matter of law at the close of the evidence. And whether we're talking about the merits or whether we're talking about the claim to 11th Amendment immunity, the proper record is the evidence at trial. And because there's a jury verdict, it's the evidence at trial viewed in the light most favorable to the verdict that the jury gave. And here, that was a verdict in favor of the plaintiffs.
But let me ask you this, Mr. Kanovitz. The only thing that worries me about your position, and I think something that I at least need to think through, is how to reconcile the timing point here with language from the Supreme Court's decisions indicating that even at the point of appellate review, an 11th Amendment issue can be raised. That's even later than right before the jury gets the case.
Sure. And obviously there's two parts essentially to the 11th Amendment. There's the classic 11th Amendment, the text, which is the diversity jurisdiction.
No, I understand that.
And then there's this font of sovereign immunity. And the Supreme Court in the case that we cite, which is the Schacht case, and even in later cases, has been clear that, you know, there is a quasi-jurisdictional element to the sovereign immunity portion. But that doesn't mean that states, you know, or someone who's claiming to stand in the shoes of the state can manipulate it.
Well, but in the Schacht case itself, the court seems amenable to the idea that the 11th Amendment can be raised at the appellate stage. And if that's true, at least that would knock the legs out from under Judge Kennelly's timing rationale. He also ruled in the alternative that there were other reasons why this wasn't a good claim. But I'm trying to focus on the timing right now.
I actually don't think that it would, because there's the concurrence in Schacht and then the later Lapides case are clear that a state can't manipulate how it raises it. And here, you know, when you look at what happened, we filed this suit. They filed their affirmative defenses, didn't say anything at all about this defense. We did what, you know, litigants are supposed to do. We served discovery, and we said, explain to us what your affirmative defenses are. And then we pursued our case that way. And then when the time came for summary judgment, and they filed a separate summary judgment on qualified immunity for the individual liability, we laid down. We didn't oppose it at all because we didn't want an interlocutory appeal, and there was no other defense in the case. Sheriff Dart, or, you know, it was his predecessor, Sheriff Sheehan, was sued in his individual capacity. You can't wait, you know, keep it quiet until after we let go of that claim and then say, aha, 11th Amendment immunity on a grounds that no one could have foreseen coming because it's a ridiculous interpretation of the underlying regulation. And you don't have, and I guess this goes to the merits of the 11th Amendment immunity, but, you know, that font of sovereign immunity doesn't kick in unless there's a federalism concern. And there is no federalism principle here. You know, the sheriff is not the state itself. There's nothing about the case that's going to result in a judgment against the state treasury. And there's no interference with the state's policy brought by these claims. You know, the only regulation, the only statement at all of any policy about the state that they're able to cite you is a regulation that says a strip search shall be conducted in a place that ensures the privacy and dignity of the individual. Our claims are congruent with that regulation. They don't, they're not at odds with it, and therefore there's no basis to claim that somehow this lawsuit is at odds with state policy. You know, given that fact, There's no reason why we would have ever foreseen that they were going to raise an 11th Amendment immunity argument about this, and we relied. And, you know, just as a state can't remove a case to federal court if it's been sued in a state and then claim, aha, I got you, 11th Amendment immunity, it's the same thing. So, you know, I think Judge Kennelly was right to find...
You mean it's the same thing? You filed this lawsuit in federal court. It wasn't the sheriff's choice.
That's correct, Judge, and I apologize for this language. It's the same thing that a state is manipulating the when it and how it
invokes. That's what lawyers are paid for. Their job is to manipulate things in order to favor their client. The question is, can they do it?
Right.
Now, it's perfectly clear that a state can waive the 11th Amendment in the classic sense of an intentional relinquishment of a known right. Are you saying there was a waiver in that sense?
Absolutely not.
Right. So your argument is forfeiture rather than waiver.
Thank you. Yeah, that's
correct. I take it it's also clear, the Supreme Court says, that judges have discretion about whether to enforce such a forfeiture or not in 11th Amendment law.
That's correct as well. And I think that's what we see in this court's Higgins case and what we see also in the Shack case, is the sense that a judge does have discretion. And Judge Kennelly used that discretion in a way that wasn't even remotely an abuse of discretion, and they haven't even said it was an abuse of discretion.
Not simply his discretion.
Pardon?
Not simply his discretion. Discretion is reviewable here.
It is for an abuse of discretion. That's correct, Judge. But in this case, we had relied, and what I was trying to get, the point, Judge, that I was trying to get across when I said it's the same thing, it's that you can't, if you're a state, you can't wait and then invoke it in a way that is unfair. And
but
that
you're
is
saying it shouldn't be done, and that Judge Kennelly didn't abuse his discretion on the timing branch of his decision in thinking that in this instance, you would like to persuade us anyway that he did not abuse his discretion in that doesn't get to the other part, even if he said, fine, I'll entertain this 100%, is it a meritorious 11th Amendment claim? He thought not.
Correct. And I guess that is part of what can inform his discretion. But again, from our perspective, the thing that we find most unfair about the belated attempted invocation was that we had already rolled over on the individual capacity claims after trying to do discovery and after looking at their affirmative defenses, and they did nothing to put us on notice of that. I am prepared to talk about the merits. We have a jury verdict here based upon absolutely adequate evidence and three claims that are not at all controversial. Nothing about this class takes issue with the ability of law enforcement to use a humanely conducted strip search. It is a legitimate tool. It can be used upon intake to a jail, certainly. We brought this case because every night in that jail, there is an abusive and demeaning, ceremony that is associated with these strip search procedures. They take guys 60 at a time, 100 at a time, sometimes more, line them up on a wall, force them to strip naked and touch. And, because human beings are, constructed in a way that they find that naturally abhorrent, the guards use all manner of abuse to force them to obey those commands. There is actual violence. There are threats of violence. That's what the Department of Justice found. That is what this jury found when they found that it was the official policy of the Sheriff's Department. Every man that testified at that trial who went through the strip search talked about it. Mr. Wilborn, who observed strip searches every night for months, confirmed it. That is the focus of the suit. And those strip searches, that manner of strip searching, is demeaning, it's terrifying, and it's degrading. And every single policymaker from the jail, not surprisingly, when they came to trial and looked the jury in the eye, said, there's absolutely no reason to do strip searches like that. There's no law enforcement purpose behind it. In fact, they claim to have stopped it in 2007, and they said the solution is these privacy stalls. There was a landslide of evidence that those privacy stalls were never used, and the policy was never changed. And the only way that the defendants are in this court looking you in the eye and trying to say, no, we really do need to do shoulder-to-shoulder naked group strip searches with terrorizing and violent commands is because they've thrown the record out the window. And, the record If you look at their statement of facts, it's fairly useless. 75% of it is based upon their summary judgment statement, some unilateral crafting of facts that then is supposed to be tested by the judge for support. And the judge said many of them are not supported. Others of them are disputed in a way that requires trial. And then even in the brief now, there's, you know, facts, quote unquote, being cited that there's no basis for at all. They don't even purport to reference the record.
But I take it your primary argument at the moment is simply that this is not within the set of orders that can be reviewed immediately. I'm trying to be careful in the way I phrase this, because actually immunity appeals in a certain sense are not interlocutory. They are a collateral order appeals, and your position is that this one shouldn't be here now.
Were the underlying immunity appeal not frivolous, that it could be a different story. But yes, this is, you know, there is no merit to their position such that it would even justify the form of finality that we have under the collateral order doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it shouldn't be here. And, unless there are further questions from the court, I think the proper thing for me to do is to yield back the rest of my time and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Anything further?
A few points, Your Honor. We would just note that first, as this court has noted, the 11th Amendment immunity, to call it an immunity is somewhat of a misnomer. It's essentially a jurisdictional bar. And again, we would point to the three Supreme Court cases that we cited in our brief, such as Pew and Calderon, that it can be raised at any time, and we do believe it's proper at this point. Additionally,
the only problem is that on that front is that it can't possibly be a jurisdictional bar, or it couldn't be waived.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's why we assert that it has not been waived, and it's properly.
No, you misunderstand the point. Real jurisdictional rules cannot be waived. The 11th Amendment can be waived. Therefore, it's not a real jurisdictional rule. That's
true,
a perfectly simple syllogism.
That is
in
true.
In the sense of the court's power to hear the case, and the Supreme Court has been engaged in a line of cases, the most recent being the Reed Elsevier case, in which it has been trying to tighten up the use of that word jurisdiction, reserving it for what Judge Easterbrook is talking about, those things that really go to the court's power to act, not those things that can be waived, that are of, they're important if they're raised in a timely manner, they certainly need to be attended to, but they aren't jurisdictional.
I would also assert, Your Honor, that the 11th Amendment is obviously a question of law, and the fact that it was not addressed in full below as far as discovery goes, I don't think that's relevant, because at the end this is a very simple question as to whether the sheriff is a state actor when he complies with this provision. And again, I would simply assert that 701.40 says the sheriff shall conduct strip searches, and that is what he does. If there are no further questions,
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.